Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
The Federal Communications Commission impacts so many areas of our lives. For example, the agency is providing funds to help restore the communications networks in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands that were devastated by Hurricane Maria. It has just levied its largest fine ever against a Florida man for robocalls. Yay! It's also proposed regulations to prevent cramming and slamming of our phone bills. And we're going to talk about broadband deployment and rural areas. So lots of things of interest to consumers, Chairman. We're welcome here to Federal Communications Commission Chairman Pai, Ajit Pai. Chairman Pai, it is such a treat to have you on.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
Now, these are some very great issues to talk about, and I think consumers particularly are going to be interested in some of the things that you're doing to help prevent us from getting ripped off. But first, let's talk about the initiative to provide funding to help these devastated islands from the hurricane. Not only did they hit by Maria, but they were hit by Irma as well. So I guess Maria did the most devastation in Puerto Rico. But tell us what's going to happen here.
Well, thanks for the question. And there's no doubt that Hurricane Maria has wrought some of the worst devastation that we've seen from a storm or any natural disaster in perhaps living memory. I personally have been on the phone constantly with some of the carriers down there, with the Puerto Rican authorities, with my counterparts at FEMA and other agencies to do everything we can. And one outgrowth of that was an order that we recently adopted. I proposed it on Monday. We adopted it on Tuesday, that will deliver approximately $76 million to some of the telephone companies and other telecom carriers in Puerto Rico to help them rebuild the networks. Obviously, when communications networks are down in a situation like this, it almost literally leaves all these folks stranded without any way to communicate with the outside world. So we want to get those networks up and running as quickly as possible. And our hope is that this funding will give them the flexibility to do that. And we're very grateful for their cooperation in helping this happen.
How will it be distributed? Is it going directly to the carriers who are impacted? Or how are the funds going to be deployed? How are they going to be distributed to the islands?
Yes, it will go directly to the carriers. Right now, they participate in a program known as the Universal Service Fund. And what we do is we, on a periodic basis, give them funding, federal subsidies, essentially, for building out some of these networks and maintaining them. We had the idea, well, what if we accelerated the funding that they would get over the next 7 months into one upfront lump sum payment? And instead of having very arcane rules, well, you can build out in this area, you can't build out in that area with these funds, allow them to use those funds to repair and restore their networks. And our understanding from what they've told us and from prior experience is that this will give them the flexibility to get those networks running as quickly as possible, because right now there is literally no communication in a huge swath of the island.
Well, you know, the problem with that, of course, is if you need emergency help or anything, there's no way to call for it. So, you know, not only does it cut us off from our family and friends, but it cuts us off from all the help that we need if we're in a dire strait. So, yeah, I applaud your efforts. Is that going to be enough money? It's probably going to take a lot more than that to get this poor island and its communications network, which looks to me like it's been almost totally destroyed.
Oh, it's just an incredible. I haven't had a chance to visit there myself, of course, but from what I've heard from the folks who are on the ground and some of the pictures we've seen, it is unlike anything that we've seen over the past couple of months in Harvey, in South Texas, or even in Irma in South Florida. It's just a level of devastation we haven't seen before. Still,
right.
Almost 90% of the cell sites are out across the island. So we're going to have to think creatively here at the FCC and across government, I think, about ways to help some of the poor folks in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, too. I don't want to leave them out.
Yeah.
They also suffered under Maria.
Their devastation, I don't think, was quite as bad as Puerto Rico, but terrible, terrible devastation. Well, let's go on and talk about some of the other issues that affect consumers. Of course, what you've just described is a very big one that impacts a lot of our populace. So anyway, robocalls.
Oh, my God.
We hate them.
Yeah.
you know, and people say to me, well, why doesn't the Do Not Call Registry prevent them? And I say, you know, these are crooks calling. They don't care
right.
If there's a Do Not Call Registry. So they don't care at all. But tell us about this fine. You all are trying to levy a fine if it's upheld by the courts, and I'm hoping for you, that against a Florida man for robocalls. And boy, did he have a scam going on.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And it just drives me crazy, not just as a regulator, but as a consumer who gets these robocalls constantly on my work phone. It's unbelievable. So this gentleman who is based in Florida unleashed in just the last 3 months of 2016 over 100 million robocalls on American consumers. And just one person in one state doing all this damage. And so we imposed a fine, or we proposed a fine of $120 million, the largest fine in the FCC's history. And to me, it was warranted not just by the law, but by the fact that this is the number one area of consumer complaints, and he was perhaps the most notorious robocaller we've ever seen. And so we wanted to send a message, not just to him, but to anyone who is using these robocalls as a business model, that this FCC is a cop on the beat, and we are not going to stand for consumers getting annoyed or even worse, scammed out of their hard-earned money.
Do you have any idea how much money he collected from all these?
It's really difficult to get a handle on it because not everyone who has been scammed would necessarily file a complaint about it. Sometimes some of the victims don't want authorities to know because they feel embarrassed. And so we want to do everything we can to put a dent, obviously, in his bottom line and hopefully to try to give some of the consumers who are scammed a sense of relief, if not restitution.
Well, something that I read said that you all were really alerted to a lot of this, not only from complaints from consumers, but by a couple of companies that were impacted. Can you tell us about those?
Absolutely. And here I am so grateful to the team at TripAdvisor. One of the things that they found is that some of the robocalls were falsely invoking TripAdvisor's name. And, TripAdvisor has worked hard over the years to build a brand, and it's very consumer-friendly. And when these scamming robocalls pretend to be TripAdvisor and it turns out to be something it's not, well, that hurts the company. So they helped us very much root out some of the fraud that was happening as a result of these robocalls. And so I can't thank them enough. And to me, at least, it highlights the fact that this is a partnership with the public sector and the private sector that have to work together cooperatively to try to stop this scam, this sort of problem from happening again.
Well, it's not only that it robs consumers of money, but it robs us of time. And, unfortunately, I have such a hard time passing up a call. There's something about me that says, you're supposed to answer the phone, Shirley, do it. And, so I answer it. But you know what I have learned? It doesn't matter whether I answer it and hang right up or not. If I've answered it, they know it's a live number. Does that make a difference?
It makes a huge difference. And I'm like you. It's part of the problem is that now some of these scammers have the ability to spoof a phone number. And so they can make it seem like it comes from not just your area code, but from the first three digits of your own number. So you might be thinking, well, I don't have it programmed in my phone, but maybe it's the local pharmacy or maybe my child's teacher at school wanted to call about an issue. So you answer the phone and it's a double whammy. Number one, as you said, you waste your own time. And number two, that is an alert to some of these folks. Okay, there's a human being on the other side of this call who's willing to answer the phone, and that just sends you down this rabbit hole of problems. So
let's just take a brief pause here and let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai, and we're talking about some of the issues the agency works on that helps us as consumers. Going back to the robocalls, and I heard one of the scams that they would ask the consumer, can you hear me? And if you replied yes, they'd sign you up for all kinds of services. They would record that yes and claim that you actually purchased the services. That's just such a tacky way to do business, honestly. But at any rate, so the advice to consumers is don't answer it, but you can't. You just can't because the spoofing issue is one. And I know spoofing is against the law, isn't it? Am I right about that?
It is, and part of the issue is that some of these scammers, who, especially those who lie abroad outside of the U.S. borders, they just don't care about what the U.S. laws
exactly.
are.
Right,
so
exactly.
That's why we are taking steps now to give carriers who are here in the United States more authority to block numbers that are obviously spoofed. And ultimately, we are moving to what is called a call authentication standard, essentially a digital fingerprint for every phone call, so that if you get a call on your phone, you will know ultimately, okay, this is the person person who it is purporting to be, and you can answer the phone with confidence. That is ultimately where we want
to go. I love it. Is that some ways down the road, or
it is? In all candor, it's very technically difficult, and it's the engineering behind it is exceedingly complex. But the long story short is that some really smart folks are working very hard to try to come up with this authentication standard. There are a bunch of different companies, a bunch of different technologies that have to be brought to bear to this. But we have started that conversation, and hopefully, before too long, we'll be able to end it.
I know that there are a lot of apps. Some of them are free. Some of them charge small fees that you can put on your cell phone. I think there's probably more options for people with cell phones than there are people with landlines. Like me, I have both, so I, you know, get a double whammy.
Absolutely. And I've met with some of these companies. I was up in Seattle and met an innovative company called Hiya, H-I-Y-A, and they showed us how consumers everywhere are using their app to report in real time the fact of the robocall, where it seems to be coming from, and that sort of thing. And that company is able to map out for us, you know, here are some hotspots you might want to look at. And there are others, too. Nomo Robo and a few other companies have really done innovative work here. And so we're really grateful to have their support. It's an all-hands-on-deck effort, I think, to stop this scourge of civilization.
Oh, it's really terrible. It takes away so much from consumers, not only in their money, but time. Now, so consequently, I wanted to mention CTIA.org is a great website to go and find, no matter what platform your phone uses, you can find the apps that are there. They have an extensive list of apps. I use an Android phone. They had a ton of apps that I could put on my phone to block robocalls. So I thought that was pretty cool. That's a great website, CTIA.org. I assume do you all have stuff like this on your website too, Chairman?
We do. If you go to FCC.gov and you look for the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau site, there's a page for consumers that will give them as much information as you can handle about all of these issues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's worth trying because they just continue to get more and more robocalls. And I guess part of that reason is if you get a consumer to fall for it, it's a high payoff for the perpetrator because they don't invest very much in setting up these computers to just keep dialing phone numbers.
Indeed, and it really makes you wonder sometimes. I know it sounds naive, but my gosh, if these folks would just pour some of this creative energy into curing cancer or helping the homeless, I think we would have, society would be so much better off.
Amen to that. Yeah, unfortunately, I've thought the same thing, you know, but maybe there's a gene in them that just doesn't allow them to walk the straight and narrow. Who knows? You know, and it really is, it is disturbing how they can rip off people. And, you know, there was the whole plague of supposedly IRS robocalls where you were being threatened by the IRS. And
And this is the one that actually affirmatively makes me angry. We found out last year there were public reports about a number of call centers in India, nine of them, I believe, that were working together to robocall American consumers. And they would say, I'm an IRS agent, and you owe us a bunch of money. And if you don't pay up, you're going to lose your home. You're going to lose your livelihood. Everything is going to be bad for you. And some consumers, even if they didn't owe anything, you know, you get a call from, seems to be from the IRS, you know, the hair on the back of your neck stands up a little bit. And so these call centers are raking in something like $150,000 every single day. And so when I had a chance to speak with my counterpart at the Indian FCC, one of the issues I brought up with him was, look, we really need your cooperation in cracking down on these kinds of scams because we can't do it ourselves if it's beyond our borders. And to my, I was very grateful to the fact that he actually agreed, yes, let's collaborate here. We'll get our law enforcement authorities in touch, and we're starting to make progress on that front. It's now an international issue, not just a domestic issue.
Oh, yeah, because the technology makes it so easy, no matter where you are in the world, to reach the consumers in the United States. So
exactly.
It certainly does. Do you know where most of the calls come from? Are you able to identify them?
We are able to identify some of them. There are some hotspots. India, unfortunately, is one of them where we see a great number of calls. And it's even amazing. Hiya showed us that some of the calls that we get from India are on a 9-to-5 basis over there. So people literally go to a building, clock in for work, make robocalls all day, then clock out at 5 p.m. So It's not just sort of somebody staying up all hours of the night. It's actually a job that a lot of people
have.
Oh,
my goodness. So
it's, there's a lot of work to be done, and not just here in the United States.
Oh, man. Oh, you got it. Well, let's move on to one of those other issues that, you know, this is an issue, the slamming and cramming. This was with us years and years ago, and it was a real plague. Then I think it, at least to my knowledge, it kind of died down a little bit, but it's back with us, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately.
Describe for our listeners what we mean when we say slamming and cramming.
Happy to. Slamming is the phenomenon where you get a phone call from somebody who says, you know, how would you like to switch your long-distance carrier? And you say, well, no, I'm pretty happy with the way it is. But they go ahead and switch it anyway. That's called slamming. Now, sometimes if you check your phone bill, you might see some charges on that bill that don't appear familiar to you. And you say, well, I never authorized these charges. What are these? And these aren't coming from my wireless carrier. And the imposition of those unauthorized charges, that's known as cramming. And so together, slamming and cramming cause huge problems. Obviously, they just violate consumers' consent, which is the basic problem, but they also take money out of consumers' pockets. And that's why we've taken action to try to crack down on those two phenomena.
Okay. And you just recently issued a statement about what you were planning on doing, some of the actions that you're taking or have taken. And we're going to come back and talk about that as soon as we get back from our break. I'll just let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is the Federal Communications Commissioner Chair, Consumer Chair. Yeah, Consumer Chair. Yeah, I'm so wrapped up in consumer problems, I can't even talk. The Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai is talking about some of the initiatives the agency is taking to help consumers on the hot button issues for us, the things that really just drive us around the bend. And you have just recently issued a statement on slamming and cramming. So tell us what your goals are here and how it's going to help consumers.
So our goals here are pretty much twofold. First, we want to take very aggressive action, enforcement action, against the folks who we find are doing slamming or cramming against consumers. And so we're going to impose fines wherever we see violations of our rules. But the second part of it, and something that we tried to firm up, is the fact that in some cases our rules are a little bit vague, or there might not be rules prohibiting some of these practices. And so what we did a couple of months ago was to put on paper very clear rules that say that slamming and cramming is against, both of those are against the law. We codify a ban on misrepresentation. So if someone calls you and says, oh, we're actually from your carrier, but they're not, that's a violation. And the same thing, if somebody goes after you and puts these unauthorized charges on your bill, we put those bad actors on notice that the consumer consent is the basic standard. So if you violate that standard, you're going to be liable. And I think this is going to give us a much firmer legal foundation going forward to tell all of these unscrupulous actors, look, you're on notice, the FCC is watching what you're doing, and we're going to take action if you don't do what the rules require.
Okay, now the important thing for consumers here is to check those bills and to
Absolutely.
Report them to the FCC immediately.
Absolutely. And I know sometimes our inclination, you know, we get so much mail, and even in a bill, there might be several pages and it takes time to go through. But it's really important that you do that, because you never know what kind of charges might end up on your bill. And if you don't figure out about it and you don't tell us about it, then we can't know. We can't take action either. And so it's really important for us that consumers take the time to look at those bills and let us know if they see anything that looks awry.
All they can do, they can go to the FCC website, fcc.gov.
And Absolutely.
And file a complaint, and that's so easy to do. You all have made it very easy for consumers to register complaints. So the biggest thing then for the consumer is just, let's underline it. Check your bills. And oftentimes these amounts are kind of small, so that the crooks are hoping they're going to escape the notice of the consumer.
Exactly, and that's part of the problem. They're not putting $1,000 or whatever on your bill. You know, it's just a dollar or two, perhaps. But if you think about how many millions of consumers there are, well, only a dollar or two adds up pretty quickly. It becomes profitable. So people really need to be careful about it and not just write off a dollar or two as the cost of doing business. You know, really let us know, because that could be evidence of somebody who's trying to scam a great many consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, likely. I mean, it's more than likely that if it's on your bill, it's on a lot of other people's bills. bills too. So yes, and report it to the FCC.gov website. I mean, they'll take action, and that's so important. Let's talk about another area, which is one that I'm not that familiar with, but I know it's something that you all have been working on, and that is how do you get broadband into rural areas? And you're considering various options, I understand.
Absolutely. This is one of my primary passions here at the FCC, is closing what I call the digital divide. And that is the gap between those who have access to the internet and other advanced technologies and those who don't. And I've found over the course of my travels throughout the United States that increasingly that divide is an urban-rural one, that folks in urban areas might have high-speed access and choices that folks in rural areas simply don't have. And I've seen for myself in places like Cape and Springs, West Virginia, and Mission, South Dakota, and Durand, Wisconsin, and other places like that, even my hometown of Parsons, Kansas, that a lot of rural areas are being left behind. And as a result, people in those areas don't have a sense of optimism about the future. And I think part of the reason for that is that today, in 2017, so much depends on having access to the internet, being able to apply for a job, to start a business with a large customer base, to have your kids be able to do their homework, to be able to see a specialist using telemedicine if there's not a specialist in your area. Even things like precision agriculture. I mean, there's no such thing as a dumb tractor anymore. A lot of these farmers are using advanced technologies. They need it. And so, to me at least, the FCC has a really important role to play in making sure that every American has what I call digital opportunity. And so we're using all the tools in the toolbox to try to make sure that the internet is built out in all parts of this country.
So what are you're considering using satellite networks as well?
Instead of
Absolutely. Just the wiring? Okay.
Yeah, so from my perspective, I'm technology neutral. I want all of these technologies to be brought to bear. Satellite is really promising. There's some companies that are going to launch a bunch of satellites into space, and they think they can beam those signals back to the Earth in a way that would be pretty much comparable to what you would get from a terrestrial provider. There are other wireless companies, too, that are doing some really innovative things, and there are other companies, too, wired companies, so telephone and cable companies and others that want a chance to compete in some of these areas. So we've got a federal subsidy program that we've opened up for all of these companies to compete for, and we want all of them to have the maximum incentive to build out some of this infrastructure in parts of the country that just don't have it.
I come from a small town in the mountains down in Virginia, and you don't necessarily have good coverage in those areas. And so, yes, it does. It makes a world of difference, you know, especially for our young people who are so into technology anyway. If you want them to stay in the rural areas, that's one way to help them to stay there, is to give them access to what the rest of the world has.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even in my home state of Kansas, 77 of Kansas's 105 counties have lost population over the last decade. And I hear it time and time again from folks in these towns that, you know, the young people want to go to the big cities like Wichita and Kansas mm-hmm. City because they just can't get the technology that they expect in the places where they've grown up.
Well, we live in a connected world, don't we?
We do. It's we're not in the world so it was when I was a kid, where it was three channels on TV and the number two pencil. It's there's people are on their phones, they're on their computers, and it's a very connected world now.
It's a very different one. Well, what do you see in terms of the deployment? Is there a large segment of our population that is underserved?
There is. There's a huge population that is unserved altogether, and especially in rural and remote and tribal areas, that's a big problem. And there are areas that are underserved, too. There might be neighborhoods within urban areas, for example, that there might be urban areas that are generally served, but there are pockets that aren't. And so we want to be able to fill in those gaps. And I've made some proposals last year to Congress to help change that. And I'm really pleased to say that there's bipartisan legislation now pending in Congress. It's called the Gigabit Opportunity Act, sponsored by Senator Capito from West Virginia, a Republican, and Senator Coons from Delaware, a Democrat, and similar legislation in the House. And they're trying to fill in those gaps of the underserved. And that's an exciting development, not just because it's important to get people connected, but you know, bipartisan effort these days is something I think we should applaud and welcome.
Absolutely. Well, Chairman Pai, it's been such a treat to have you on. Just to let listeners know, we've been talking with the Federal Communications Commission Chairman, Ajit Pai. We've been talking about a lot of items that are of interest to all of us. We thank you for being on, and you have been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500. I'm Shirley Rooker.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA 7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.